All right, let's go to 1 John, the second chapter. There are different variations of this old story about a man who had a pet snake. He loved the snake, he fed the snake, he watered the snake, he carried the snake with him. He loved the snake. But one day the snake bit him. And he said, now remember, this is a legend, "Why did you bite me? I have treated you so well." And the snake said, "But you knew I was a snake." What do snakes do? Snakes bite. Now, sometimes Christians are like the man in that story in that they carry a pet sin around with them. And they pamper it, and they practice it, and they love it, but then are surprised when that sin bites them. I'll tell you how it often happens. We become Christians, we have some bad habits in our lives, and we begin to work on them, and we eradicate one, and we do away with another, and we're able to overcome a third, and before long we're down just to one, and we've been able to get rid of all these others, but this is the one that's the hardest. This is the one that's a real challenge. And after trying and failing, trying and success and falling, and finally they just say, you know, just one, that's okay. There's nobody perfect, so I just won't worry about that one. But snakes bite and sins condemn. Now, we're talking about reigniting our spiritual passion for God in this series of lessons. We mentioned earlier that in order for our fire to burn brightly, we've got to make sure there's nothing putting the fire out. So if you were trying to build a fire at a campsite, but there was a strong wind blowing, you might have difficulty getting that fire going because the wind keeps putting it out. Or if you were trying to build it in the rain and the rain kept falling on it, you'd say, "I can't get this fire going." Why? Because the rain's putting it out. Or you're using wood that's wet. You say, "I just can't get this wood to burn because it's wet." Sometimes Christians are like that because we try to get our spiritual lives in gear, but there's something holding us back. We're going into a headwind. We've got rain falling into our fire that's keeping it burning lower than it should. We want it to burn brightly. So this lesson is about identification and motivation to correct anything that needs to be corrected in our lives. And before I go any further, we're way past the time where we can say Christians don't sin, that we're not tempted, aren't we? I mean, the Apostle John said, if we say we have no sin, we make him a liar. First John, he was an apostle. He was one of the inner circle. So he had sin. That doesn't mean we have as many sins as we used to have and we sin and we don't worry about it, or that we sin every day. That doesn't mean that. But it does mean that there's not anybody who lives on earth besides Jesus who doesn't sin. And those become a hope of less consequence and farther apart over time as we live for Jesus. But all of us probably can benefit from an evaluation. We're going to look at three points in this lesson. Number one, three tricks up the devil's sleeve. Three tricks up the devil's sleeve. Second point will be seven questions of evaluation. Third point was three ways to deal with guilt. Probably all three of these can be of benefit to us. But let's talk about first three tricks up the devil's sleeve. And we're going to go into 1 John 2, 15 says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world." So there are forbidden loves. You know, the world has a moniker going nowadays, love is love. You know, love is, don't condemn love. Where, no, there are forbidden loves. God says, don't love the world, don't love sin. And whatever God determines is sinful, don't love that, because that would be loving a snake that will bite you and poison you. So don't love sin. Don't practice sin. Don't love the things that God hates. And God does hate. Proverbs 6:16. following seven things that the Lord hates, six things and seven are abomination to Him. So just a list there. It's not a comprehensive list, but it's a start of the things that God hates. And the first one is a proud look. So I got to be careful about my pride because that is the first thing God hates. Now let's go into our text in verse 16. Let's see the three tricks up the devil's sleeve. Now you face the same devil that Jesus faced. You face the same devil that brought Eve and Adam down. You face the same devil that's tempted everybody who's ever lived in the world. He's a real person. He walketh about as a lion seeking whom he may devour. 1 Peter 5:8. Now, by person, I don't mean a person like you and me. I mean a personality. I mean not just an entity, not just an idea, not just evil, but there is a personality associated with the devil. He came in person and tempted Eve. He came in person and tempted Jesus. Genesis 3, Matthew 4, Luke 4. Now, what avenues of temptation does he use? It's always the same three things. Now, these are not all the variations. Those would be endless. But they fall into three categories. Every sin that you've ever done, every temptation you've ever faced, or I have, they all would fall into one of three categories, sometimes more than one, but always at least one. What are they? They're listed in our verse. So let's read them, and then we'll simplify them with a single word. I'm in 1 John 2:16. For all that is in the world, that thing we're not supposed to love. Now the word world is used in different ways. For God so loved the world, John 3:16, that's all of humanity. We love all people. But world in this sense is in the same sense as James 4:4, which says, if any man is a friend of the world, that's the bad part of the world. That's the sin in the world. We don't love that. So all that is in the world, well, what is in the world, John? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. It's not of the Father, but is of the world. See, there's this dichotomy, this division. There are the things that are of God, the one who loves us and wants us to come and live with Him. And then there are the things that are in the world, the things that will keep us from being able to do that. He hates those things because He loves us. And if you have children and there's something that's threatening your child like a poisonous snake, well, you're not indifferent to that snake. I was preaching Missouri somewhere. I was visiting the home of someone. He said, yeah, there was a large cottonmouth snake out in our yard. I think it was the summer before. And he said, I got small kids. He was not indifferent to that. They got rid of that snake because that was a direct threat to someone he loved. Now, God hates sin for the same reason, because it threatens someone He loves, which is you and me. Now these three categories, let's assign a single word to each one of these. Lust of the flesh. If you wanted to say, what is that in our words? It would be sensualism. Sensualism. These are not one syllable words, but they're the right word for each one. And we'll talk about them. Sensualism has at the root of it the word sense, senses. So it is that which has to do with our senses. We have five. Right? We have the eyes, the ears, smell, taste, and touch. Now, lust of the flesh, though, it's not talking only about the senses, but that's how we interact with these things. There really are three of these. The lust of the flesh have to do with eat, drink, and sex. Those three are the fleshly desires that are built within each of us. Now, all of them have a legitimate purpose. God made us the way that we are. We have to eat to live, but we can eat too much. We can eat the wrong things, and the devil can use that against us. He used that against Eve, didn't he? Eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God says you can eat anything in the Garden of Eden except this one tree. Don't eat that one. And the devil said, eat that one. And Eve gave in to it. And he came to Jesus with the same temptation. He hadn't eaten anything for 40 days, right? How long have you ever gone without food? Well, I've not ever gone 40 days. What did he look like? I guess he was skin and bones, you know? Was his head? His hair was clear enough to be able to deal with temptation. But he was at a weak moment in his life because he hadn't eaten anything. But the devil came to him. First thing he says, turn this rock into bread. Well, that would not be a temptation for me, no matter how hungry I was, because a rock's going to stay a rock, no matter how much I wish or say what I say to it. But Jesus made that rock to start with, right? He could switch it to bread if he wanted to, but he didn't. Well, he resisted temptation, but it was a lust of the flesh. You know, probably the strongest desire that we have is the desire to survive. And eating and drinking feed that. If you don't eat, you don't drink, you'll die. So survival is expressed in those two desires. Same thing with drinking. We have to drink, but we can drink things that will condemn us, that will intoxicate us, that will poison us, that will cause us to act in a way that's dishonoring to the one who made us. And then sex, the sexual temptations. There is a legitimate aspect of that relationship, of course. Hebrews 13:4 says, marriage is honorable and the bed undefiled. Nothing wrong with a sexual relationship in marriage. But whoremongers and adulteresses, God will judge. Whoremongers and adulteresses, that's someone who's engaging in sexual activity outside of marriage. It can't be before marriage. That's called fornication. Someone says, well, why do you have to have a paper? Because God said get married. Now, there's not one ceremony throughout all time. It doesn't have to be a church wedding. There are different... You say, well, what's required? For the community to recognize your marriage. Well, is that a piece of paper? In our culture, it is. In another culture, it might be jumping over a broom. It might be an announcement. It might be some leader in the community saying, you're joined. Whatever it is, God recognizes that and joins us in heaven. That's where it really matters. So before would be fornication, or it can be a sexual relationship with someone while you're married, but not your partner. You can have single adultery or double adultery. Single adultery is when one person's married and the other one isn't. Double is when both are married, but to somebody else. Now, those are temptations. Those are challenges in our culture, which is highly sexualized. Many people have opportunities to stray in dating relationships and with co-workers, people they come in contact in community events, sports teams. We have to resist lust of the flesh. I won't go far down this rabbit hole, but I can tell you that the devil is tricky. And the devil is pulling away people who know better into sin they should never do. And it brings great shame upon the church. I could drive you to churches where I've preached that are presently undergoing a terrible time because the lust of the flesh. What's the difference in that church and this church? I'll tell you what the difference is. Nothing. Except for people have resisted temptation. And it doesn't take the whole congregation. It only takes. So I have a responsibility to God for my soul, for my marriage, for my family, for my community, for my nation, but mostly for my God. So lust of the flesh. The second one is lust of the eyes. If you wanted a single word to represent what this phrase means, it's materialism. Often we associate those two together, at least I have, and I think many people do. Lust of the eyes, we automatically think of sexual images. And that is one expression of lust of the eyes, but the idea here is of I see it, I want it. So it's larger than just, it refers to material things. I'll just illustrate it a simple way. Not anything necessarily sinful about what I'm about to say, but it will illustrate it. So you go into Walmart and you got your list of stuff to buy. You know, us guys, we always have our list. We just buy exactly what's on the list, so we get out of there as soon as we can. You might go in there and say, I need this. I say, oh, I need that, you know. But anyway, you finally get to the checkout line, right? And so while you're waiting, there are shelves on both sides of you. And you say, oh, matches. I need matches. Ooh, that candy bar looks good. I think I'll get that candy bar. Oh, that's an interesting magazine. I got to read that. So before long, you added $15 to what you were going to buy. What do they call that? Impulse aisle, right? It's like buying on impulse. I didn't come in to buy it, but I saw it. I wanted it. Well, some people are that like that when they get on the internet. They go to Amazon or Etsy or some other. They're like, oh, and then the truck's pulling up. You know, FedEx and UPS every day, another box. And they're like, I don't have anywhere to put it, but I wanted it. I saw it. What is it that someone said? We spend money that we don't have for things we don't need to impress people we don't like. That's materialism. Do I really need this big house and this big community? Do I really need to drive this new model car that costs so many dollars? I don't know. That's the decisions we have to make, and there's discretion in that, right? But a whole lot of people have spent way more money than they have, and then the plague comes around and they put a penance in on Sunday. Well, I got so many bills. Who assigned you those bills? Right? Right? Yeah, materialism. Lust of the eyes. It also applies to pornography. It applies to sexual images. We ought to be careful about how we dress when we're going to be in public, that we don't become a stumbling block to somebody else. That's men and women. Men are not as attractive as women, so it's more women than men, but it's true both ways, right? Matthew 5, it's interesting God wrote it that way. It's true, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? We can't say one gender, this applies to you, it doesn't. Oh, it applies to all of us. But it's interesting that it says in Matthew 5:28, whoso looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already in his heart. And it says in 1 Timothy 2:9, let women adorn themselves in modest appearance. See the women, the men? Yeah, it's true the other way, but the way he wrote it is reality. There's a stronger desire, visual stimuli are stronger than men than in women. All right, let's move into the third one. The third one is 1 John 2:16, the pride of life. If you wanted one word for that one, it would be ostentation. That's not a word you used over breakfast this morning, is it? Ostentation. But it's the right word. What it means is, everybody look at me. Ostentation. I may have to tear you down to be on top so people can see me. I'll do that if I have to, right? I want to be seen. It's Acts 24:23 where Bernice, who is actually married to her brother, King Agrippa II, and Drusilla mentioned in the previous chapter was their sister also. That was a really messed up family. But she came into that meeting with Paul with great pomp, P-O-M-P, King James has. She marches in, everybody look at me. I suppose there was some music playing, maybe there were some flags flying, guards out there. She's dressed to the nines, she's making sure everybody knows she has arrived. That's ostentation. That's the pride of life. We don't have to go to that extent, but if I'm going out placing the emphasis on me instead of on him, then I've got the emphasis in the wrong place. That they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which art in heaven. Matthew 6:20. So that's who we want to turn the spotlight on, not me, but on him. So those are the categories. We illustrated them, but there's a whole long list that you could add to that. But now let's go into the second part of our lesson, which is the seven questions of evaluation. So what we're trying to do is figure out in my life what I need to deal with to move the needle over. Hebrews 12:2 talks about the sin which does so easily beset us. Now, in the context, that sin is the sin of unbelief, because Hebrews 11 is faith's hall of fame, right? So we have this great cloud of witnesses, 12:1, you know, those Old Testament people mention. But a lack of faith shows up in our lives in different areas. So have you ever said of someone or heard said of someone, I don't know why she struggles with that. I've never been tempted to do that. Well, Could she say honestly about if she knew about something in your life? I don't know why she struggles with that. I have never been tempted to do it. Yeah, because we have different temptations based on our personalities, based on our previous sin history, based on our context and the influences in our lives. They bring different temptations. I'm able to say, I've never smoked a cigarette or had alcohol in my mouth. I'm not tempted at all with that, either one of those. Man, I smell that cigarette smell and I'm like, ugh. I'll actually move in a parking lot to another place to get away from that smell. I see a beer commercial, I don't have any temptation to go out and buy a six pack. It stinks to me anyway, and I don't want to taste it. The lesson's not about the preacher. It never is. But do you see the point? There are other people that used to be addicted to cigarettes. They get a whiff of that, they're like, oh, and it's really hard for them. Here's another guy that used to drink before he became a Christian, and he goes into a restaurant with a bar, and he's thinking the whole time, whew, I sure would like to order one of those cold. Boy, that, yeah, because it's his experience. Background. Well, we have to resist whatever temptations are real for us, strong for us. Now, let's go down this list, seven questions. Number one, now this is another one of these things I'll never know if you participate, but don't waste this time we're about to spend together. So participate. Number one question, what sin do I struggle with the most? I'm not going to ask you, there's no test on this, but in order to benefit from the lesson, think of it. Well, what is it? You got a sin in mind. Number two, when do I commit this sin? This is called a sin profile. You ever done a sin profile? We're about to do one. We're doing one. Number two is, when do I commit this sin more often than not? In other words, let me just illustrate it a couple ways. Is this a daytime sin or a nighttime sin? Is this a weekday sin? Is this a weekend sin? When do I... Is this when I'm alone or when I'm with a certain crowd? When? So what we're looking for is a pattern, right? We're trying to isolate what the devil's using against us. It's like going into battle. You know, the Bible uses that imagery for Christians fighting against the devil, Ephesians 6, 13 to 17, that take on the armor, right? So if you were going to go, if a general is going into battle against another general, he would want to know as much about his tactics and his history as he could, his weaponry, his number of soldiers. Why? Because he's got to defeat him, and he needs to know. Like I read that George Patton with the mechanized army in World War II. Early in the war, he fought against Rommel, the desert fox down in Africa. And he won. And near the end of the day, he jumped up on one of the tanks and said, "I read your book." Because Rommel had written a book about mechanized warfare. And he knew what he was thinking. So, this is not the devil's book, this is God's book. But this book tells us the tactics of the devil. I read his tactics. Okay. Would it surprise you if you had access to the devil's office and you went in and saw a filing cabinet, pulled out the drawer that had your last name on the letters, pulled it out and you rifled through and you found a folder with your name on it, you opened it up, and there he had the dates. Tempted him with this. No luck. Tempted her with that. Ah. And so there's a long list of different temptations. Which one's the devil going to go back to? Yeah, you catch a lot of fish at a certain fishing hole. Where are you going next time? You're going back to your fishing hole, right? Like, I caught a lot of fish there. So the devil has success in your life. And I don't believe the devil can read our minds, but I do know that he knows our history because he was there when we did it. All right? So, what is my history? That's what we're looking for. Third question is it a lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life? Identify what kind it is. If it's a visual stimuli, then I got to stay away from the visual stimuli. Number four, is it a sin of the spirit or flesh? 2 Corinthians 7:1 speaks of those. In other words, is it a bad attitude or is it something that I'm doing? In other words, sin of omission or commission. Omission means I'm skipping church when I ought to go, right? I'm omitting something I should be doing. Commission is I'm doing something God said don't do. So either not doing what God said to do, or I'm doing what God said don't do that. So I'm identifying which is it a sin of laziness, or is it something that's an overt action? Next question. Who am I with when I commit this sin? Let's see if we can identify context. Is this a group sin? Someone might say, I do fine when I'm out with a youth group from church and we have a good time and I'm never tempted to sin. But you know, when I get around that group from school or from college I really struggle. Or someone else might say, you know, it's when I'm with the guys at work. You know, church, fine. Those are good people. But boy, whenever I'm within the break room with these guys, they just talk about things I don't need to be thinking about. And my language just goes where it shouldn't go. And okay. Is it a boyfriend-girlfriend sin? Is that who I'm with? You know, if sin has gone too far, it's easy to go back. Young man came to me, we had a college ministry when I was at Jacksonville, and he said, I'm thinking I'm going to have to break up with my girlfriend. This young man's a gospel preacher today. He's a fine man. And he confided, you'll never know who this is, or I wouldn't say it. But he confided, he said, my girlfriend and I are having trouble not having sex on our dates. He was smart enough to know, don't keep putting yourself in the path of temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He did break up with her. He's married to a fine Christian woman now, and they have a little girl together. So, who is with me when I commit the sin? I'm going to have to be careful about my companions, 1 Corinthians 15:33, because evil communications corrupt good morals. Identify sin. How many is that? Does anybody know? That's six? Oh, we're on six. Good. Number six. That's right where I thought we were. Number six, I thought I might have skipped one. Number six is, these are the two important ones. You can forget the others. They're beneficial, but these two are the most important. Number one, how do I feel right before I commit the sin? In other words, what is the trigger for it? Is it lust? Is it excitement? Is it adrenaline? Is it fear? What do I feel? It's like I know I'm about to give in again. What emotion? What trigger? This would be James 1:13-14. Every man is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. What's the enticement? Seventh question, most important question of all. How do I feel after I commit the sin? I did it again. I said I wasn't going to do it. I'm the weakest person. I'm so upset with myself. This is frustrating. Why? I'm the worst person in the world. I know. Why can't I be? Am I communicating? How do I feel? Do I want to go take a shower because I feel dirty? I can't sleep at night because I feel guilty? I won't look people in the eye because of what I'm thinking inside, behind my eyes? Okay. If you're a visual person, I want to take those last two questions and illustrate them. That question about how do I feel before I commit the sin. So imagine a small vial, glass jar, container. If I could take that emotion and somehow distill it into that container and cap it, I'm going to put it in this pocket. The emotion that I feel after sin, if I could take another vial and somehow put that in that vial and cap it, I put it in this pocket. I want to illustrate this. I'm not a runner. You see me running, look for what's chasing me because I'm not a runner. But I love to walk. I'll walk a lot. So I found a place in Memphis. You wouldn't think in Memphis you'd have good... But I found a place in Memphis a half mile from the school. It's in the woods. It's a trail walks. It's awesome. It's beautiful back there. And you can walk about 200 steps and you forget there's a car. You know, it's nice. It's a good place to get away. Anyway, so I walk back there. The one problem that is I've run into back there is snakes. I don't like snakes. I've had two experiences with snakes so far. Okay, the first time, you know, I don't like to waste time and I don't like to be bored. So I always take something to do when I'm walking. You know, I'll listen to something, watch something for my class or whatever. But I was first time I was talking on the phone. And I walked all the way to the end and I was coming back and I saw something in the trail up there. I said, that looks like a snake. Sure enough, it was a snake. And I had just walked past that like 5 minutes before and he's right across the trail. I don't like snakes. I don't know snakes. For me, the only good snake is a don't say it, right? Get in trouble. But yeah, but my son loves snakes. He's read every book in the Jacksonville Library about animals in general, but especially snakes. He loves them. If we'd let him, he'd have had a snake in the house. No way. Anyway, so I walked up there and got real close and got a picture of it. Said, no, I zoomed in from way back here. And got a picture of it and sent it to him. He said, yeah, Dad, that's a cottonmouth. Figures. You know, those things are not scared of you. Anyway, so it was getting dark, you know, I thought. So I'm here and he's there. My car's back there. So I said, well. So I went up there and kicked it out of the way and went, no. No, I decided I'd just see what happened. I waited. You know, that guy, I think he was looking at me out of the corner of his eye. He was watching me. But after it seemed like an hour and a half. It's probably like 5 minutes, maybe. I don't know. He slid off into the lake there. So I went by real fast, got to my car, and went, and I was good. Well, that was a year or so ago. This happened recently, like about 2 weeks ago, when I'm about to tell you. So I was proofreading some tracks. There's a series on why do good things happen to bad people, why do bad things happen to good people, why do good things happen to good people, and why do bad things happen to bad people. So I think I was reading on the why do bad things happen to bad people one. That may make sense when I tell you what happened. I was walking along proofreading and marking, and it was just after, you know, it's been cold in Memphis, so there haven't been any snakes out. And I thought, man, it's warmed up. I better watch where I'm. So I stopped. I just walked like, I don't know, a long way without looking. I stopped, I looked up, and right there was a cottonmouth with his mouth. I know he was a cottonmouth because his mouth was opened toward me with his fangs out. I would have stepped on him. He was right there. It's not a very wide trail. I thank God a lot of times I didn't. I didn't sleep much that night, I'll tell you. But here's, I said all that to say this. What if I had stepped on that snake? Well, if I didn't have a heart attack right then, what would I have done? Would have gone to the hospital, right? What would they have given me? Right. So we get these two vials out, right? So this is the antidote for this. Do you remember what these are? This is the emotion that triggers the sin. This is the emotion that comes after the sin. I say, I'm not doing that. I remember last time that happened. I'm not losing another night's sleep. I'm not going to... No. You see, that's an antidote. All right. I'm in a war for my soul. If I get to heaven, it would be because the devil failed in his plan. He doesn't intend for me to get to heaven. You could say the election of God, and I'm afraid to look at the time, but I'm gonna finish this up. You know, this is like it's not even afternoon. It's not, is it? Or is it? Oh, it's lunchtime. That's why those people are getting up, I bet. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. You've listened so well. But let me sum up. The devil's trying to take me to hell. That's as plain as I can say it. God's wanting me to go to heaven. The Bible teaches election. Some people get all messed up about that, but all election in the Bible is this. God voted for you, the devil voted against you, and you get to cast the deciding vote. Where are you going to go? If you don't try, the devil will get you, because it takes effort to make it heaven. You're going to have to fight him to get there. But with God's help, you can win that battle. We can all win that battle. Now, I'm only going to give you the third point in outline form, how to deal with guilt. Number one, face it. Don't try to drink it away, sex it away, drug it away, work it away. Face it. What is it that's causing me to feel guilt? Face it. Number two, erase it. How do you erase it? With the blood of Christ. It's the only way to erase any sin. Is the blood of Christ. So if you've never been baptized for remission of sins, erase it in baptism. If you've been a Christian but you haven't been faithful, erase it with prayer and confession. Repentance, prayer, and confession. Erase it. And then God will erase it out of His book. And then chase it. When it comes back, and it will come back, you say, no, I'm forgiven of that. Their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. Hebrews 8:12. God doesn't remember it. Now, that how does an omniscient God not remember something? Well, what does it mean? It means the same thing as in a courtroom, they have a pre-meeting, and the lawyer wants to use this evidence against the plaintiff, the defendant. And the judge says, nope, not allowed. That's what it means. When the devil tries to bring up my sin at judgment day and God's forgiven it, not allowed. I won't hear it. And once God has forgiven it, forgive yourself. Because if God's forgiven it, that's all that matters. Because God's the one doing the judging. All right, our time is up. Thank you for listening so patiently. The Lord's invitation is always open, but a gospel meeting is a good time to respond. And I'll just say this in passing. I just talked about what to do to get right in baptism or prayer. Acts 8:35 to 40, Acts 2:38. But let me say this. If you're thinking about responding to the invitation, why not go ahead and do it for two reasons. One, today's the day of salvation. 2 Corinthians 6:2. We may not have the end of the week. Number two, your example in getting right might be the catalyst to lead someone else home. And wouldn't that be joyful to know that even in your changing, God used it for good. If either of those is the case, you need to be baptized or you need the prayers of the church. Won't you come? We'll stand while we sing.